Even though it looks like it will be a very long time before we're able to return to Garrison and do Sesshin in our traditional fashion, we hope that sometime in the fall or winter we will be able to go ahead with the Jukai ceremony for those who've been participating in that training. The ceremony itself will have to be modified, of course, to accommodate these circumstances. But there's some aspects that I think will be able to maintain, including the requirement that the participants do an all-day private sitting, a Tongariro, on their own, and that they prepare and give a talk to the Sangha about precepts and how they've come to understand some aspect of them in their own life. While we recognize the value of ceremony, what's really important is that people step up and do something as part of the training. They take the practice off the cushion, make it less a private or personal experience of their own meditation, and make a commitment to participate in the Sangha on another level, usually in terms of Jikido training, but also in terms of the study group and engaging with other Sangha members in study and discussion, in which being able to honestly participate is part of the practice. How you engage others in meaningful and open dialogue is part of the practice. Joko was never one to want to promote any kind of ceremony. She didn't do Jukai ceremonies or ordinations. And she was very suspicious of people who asked for them, thinking that it was mostly a matter of trying to elevate themselves and get into some special category of senior student. And if somebody asked to be ordained, she would say, "Well, if you want to be a monk, just act like one." But most people didn't care for that answer at all, because there was obviously nothing special about that, and it would be something you do unobtrusively in the background with no recognition. In many ways, Joko was very concerned about people handling themselves properly in the Zendo and with each other. As much as anything you could tell her about your practice in Dokusan, she liked to walk around and see how people handled themselves or interacted in their spare time. In San Diego, there was a big patio outside in the backyard with tables and chairs and benches. She always used to say she judged her students by whether they put the chair back under the table when they were done sitting, whether they left things neat or messy. Now, obviously, any kind of order or behavior like that can be fetishized and is not in itself a judge of character. But the idea was that who you are is not something that's going on deep inside as a result of this private experience you might have had on the cushion. Anything like that might be perfectly nice, but unless it manifested in some change of behavior, it was just like having a beautiful dream. So she wanted to see the outer manifestation. See, in many ways, she thought students came to her with an idealized picture of what it would mean to be a Zen student, to be a monk, be a teacher. But when it came to actually showing up and doing the work involved, well, that was a whole other story. In a way, it's analogous to a young person who says, I want to be a writer, or I want to be a painter, or a musician. Well, if you want to be those things, you have to write, you have to paint, you have to practice. What makes you a writer? Not some internal sensibility, not just a love of good writing or a love of literature, and certainly not just a romanticization of other writers and the writer's life. If you've read too many books about Hemingway and Fitzgerald and in Paris in the 20s, and you think, oh, I want to be like that. No, you're a writer if you write, and not just if you write, but if somebody else says you're a writer, somebody reads what you've written, somebody else publishes you. See, if when you're published, people buy it and read it. And in a certain sense, you can't tell if you're a writer until you've written something and seen the reaction that other people have to it. You can't tell if you're a painter until you start painting and finding out how does that look on the canvas? How do other people react to it? And we can always console ourselves with romantic ideas of the misunderstood or unappreciated genius where the world doesn't recognize their secret talents. But mostly we simply have to put ourselves out there, do it, see what we actually are able to produce, see what kind of impact we're able to make. And we depend on the recognition of others to find out who we are. Certainly in this practice, we can come to it with many fantasies and ideals about being a Buddhist or what Zen is supposed to do for you. But in my generation, at least, there was, you know, this opportunity to see who was going to simply read a lot of books about Zen by Alan Watts and who was actually going to show up at a Zendo and sit in a cushion and do sessions and do them again and again, year in and year out. Today, I just read of the passing of John Lewis, an icon of the civil rights movement, who spent decades showing up, putting his life on the line. I read that when he was just a very young man, a student, he admired Martin Luther King the way so many people did. But John Lewis wrote to King and asked him what he could do. And King sent him back a bus ticket, said, show up. We're going to integrate lunch counters. If you're serious, be there. And he did. And he did it even when he got spit on and beaten up and arrested over and over and over again. Many people around the country would have said they shared King and Lewis's ideals of racial equality and justice. But they didn't show up. So many liberals of the day paid lip service to what was being done, but didn't want to get in trouble themselves. Lewis always had a motto, get in good trouble, right? Like being a writer or a painter, being an ethical person is not something you can discover about yourself solely through an act of introspection. You have to see what you actually do. You have to see how you live, what kind of commitments you make, what kind of sacrifices you make. Now, all of us have to be honest and find our own level of belief and commitment. Be honest about who we are, not to pretend to be more than we are, but not to be less than we can be out of anxiety or fear or uncertainty. What happens in this practice is we can see how difficult commitment can be and how often we are driven, you know, by what I've called curative fantasies. And how difficult it is to convert those into an ongoing commitment that doesn't offer us the comfort of being somebody special or having special experiences or getting special rewards for what we're doing. When we start to practice, we see just how divided our mind is. How even though we affirm that we're committed to this practice, parts of us just don't want to do it. Parts of us are restless, or lazy, or frightened, or distracted, or just pulled in lots of other directions. And we have to be honest about that. It's like what we've been talking about in terms of acknowledging multiple self states. We'll always have multiple competing motivations, be pulled between competing goods. Yet the practice itself is not just something we commit ourselves to, but something that changes us in the course of that commitment. In the doing, we don't just find out who we are. In the doing transforms who we are. It's like exercise that makes you stronger or fitter. The sitting allows you to build endurance and patience. It allows us to learn that restlessness can be overcome, that pain can be endured, that our minds, which confuse and frighten us, can be accepted and understood. And like writing, like painting, like music, in our sitting, who we are is not immediately revealed for once and for all. It reveals where we are now, but that's constantly subject to change and is malleable by the very practices we're engaged in. We have to learn to write. We don't just pick up the pen and express ourselves and have everything flow out automatically. It's work. We learn to do it with skill. And we do it by endless revision and comparison with other examples of how it's done. And there's something like that in our practice. We learn how to do it by doing it. And we're transformed in who we are by the doing of it. Practice is about finding out who you really are. But we don't do that just by introspection and looking deep inside to see who we appear to be to ourselves. Find out who you really are. Watch what you do.